Castellanos has it, and the Phillies have the National League Championship. They have beaten the Padres 4-3, and they celebrate on their home turf as the Phillies are the 2022 NL champs.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 622, your Trey Turner signs with the Phillies as a free agent podcast. It's a very long titled podcast, but it's not an emergency podcast because this podcast is on schedule. This is when we normally record, so we could call it emergency, but I'd be lying to you. We were going to do this anyway. But we're going to break down this Trey Turner free agent deal that the Phillies have inked him to here in the early stages of the winter meetings. And joining me to do that are my good friends Justin Clue, Liz Rocher, and Chris Jones, who you know from Absolutely Hammered. We'll start off introducing Chris because I know he's not a regular contributor here to this particular podcast, but we're going to start getting him on this podcast more because of the outstanding work he does on Absolutely Hammered. You can follow him on Twitter at @AH_podcast. What is the podcast? Chris, I'm blanking on it now. I usually have it in front of me.
I think it's AH_pod. I had to look at my screen.
Okay, good. The AH_pod. If you probably already follow it, so you didn't know it was Chris. But Chris, hey, how are you doing, buddy? Welcome to Hittin' Season. Trey Turner signs, buddy.
Yeah. I didn't want him at all.
No?
No, I'm not really into this move. It doesn't move the needle for me. No. I mean, they said they were going to push the needle, and this is what Dombrowski gives us. I don't really get it, you know?
Yeah, I thought that just meant PEDs.
All right.
I was like, whatever.
He meant something else.
I can only keep the bit going for so long.
We can only pay for the first 10 seconds of the song.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I will.
Vivo is going to sue us.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. No, for sure. So Chris is with us. And of course, you're Justin Clue there from Baseball Prospectus and The Dirty Inning and Continued Success. And of course, the Absolutely Hammered podcast he does with Chris. Follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, what's up, buddy? Trey Turner's a Phil?
Yeah. Real quick before we get into the Turner stuff. We did not talk about having Chris on this show more often before you just said that while we were recording. I just said, if that's something we want to talk about as a committee, maybe a little bit after this might be a wise idea.
You guys can keep me locked in the attic or whatever, like the other Bart from The Simpsons. It's fine.
I just want to make it clear I did not agree to this.
This is a family-friendly podcast. So.
That's right.
That being said, yeah. I gotta tell you, as nice as it was to see a competitive Phillies team make a deep playoff run, the offseason portion of that of, okay, what big free agent is this now a good Phillies team going to sign? I slipped right back into that like an old welcoming jacket. That was very familiar. And it doesn't feel strange to be here. I was saying that they would take care of business pretty quick. I felt like Dave Dombrowski would really relish being around other people at the actual winter meetings in person for the first time since 2019 and just get into it and really be in his element and work something out pretty quick. I was just actually telling that to Philadelphia Sports Table podcast earlier today, about 15 minutes before the news broke that Turner had signed. So in a segment you probably won't hear.
Won't hear that segment. No. Nope.
It's now obsolete. So this is I'm not surprised and I'm very pleased.
Yeah. Great signing by the Phillies. That seems to be universally praised so far. Liz Rocher, also from Yahoo Sports, joining us in continued success. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, your thoughts on Trey Turner, now a Philly for life.
Woo! That's about how I feel. Very,
you could do better than that.
I'm sure I could, but I don't want to blow out the microphone in everyone's ears.
She's not. Very, she doesn't want to overmodulate, and that's she's very, very podcast savvy. So,
Chris,
I
can be very loud. And shriek with the best of them. So,
Liz, you're just considerate of the headphone users. They appreciate
true.
You.
That's true. People have these pods in their ears, and you could literally deaf someone if you do that. So
exactly. I'm very happy that Trey Turner is the Philly. I had no one knew this was coming, right? Right? No one knew this.
I don't think nobody. Well, I mean, this had been the most sensible rumor of recent memory. Like, this was such a perfect fit, an ideal fit. And everybody seemed to think that this was going to happen. But I certainly was getting no feeling from being on Twitter on Monday morning that the Phillies were getting ready to strike this quickly. I think the speed with which Dave Dombrowski and Sam Fold have swung this deal at the winter meetings caught me a little bit by surprise, because our habit has been with big free free agent signings that they take a while. It's usually after Christmas when they eventually come on board. It's not early in the winter meetings, but apparently all they had to say was 11 years and $300 million. They got that 300 number, and that was enough for Trey Turner to ink a deal that's very, very much like Bryce Harper's, a long contract, $300 million or more, but it keeps the average annual value low at $27.7 million. So he's signed through 2032, and he is really everything this team needs. He's a decent defensive shortstop. His defensive metrics got way better as the season went on last year. There was a mechanical adjustment he made as far as positioning goes that really helped with that. He can hit at the top of the lineup. He steals bags. He has a high batting average. He gets a ton of hits. He understands hitting. And for a team that has a lot of streaky hitters, that has a lot of home run power bats, they needed a guy at the top of the lineup who just consistently hits the ball hard everywhere, can hit the home run, but you can hit leadoff and not close your eyes and hold your breath. You know, he actually is a real leadoff hitter that you can put at the top of this lineup, whether you hit him number one or number two. So Justin, I'm going to start with you on this because the fit made all the sense in the world. The other guys would have made sense, no doubt about it, but this fit made all the sense in the world.
Yeah. I think the Phillies knew that. I think everybody watching knew that. I honestly don't think I would have been displeased with anybody coming out of this group that the Phillies could have signed. Turner brings, I think, some of the stuff the Phillies have been missing. I think he brings a little more balance to their lineup. I feel like they get a little more speed here rather than the power that you see present in just about everybody else in this lineup. I Turner as a player, I think we've all got a nice look at him when he was with the Nationals repeatedly. And, you know what kind of player he is. And I think the most important part is the kind of player he is the kind of player Bryce Harper said he wanted on the team. And I think everybody but Mike Trout that Bryce Harper has wanted on the Phillies has eventually joined the Phillies. So I look forward to the next name he whispers from his prophetic lips.
Yeah, and this just leads to the next question. What's the matter with Mike Trout? Like, why did you not listen to Bryce Harper? You silly
what
man.
An idiot.
What an idiot.
What a dummy. Period.
He's doing terrible about himself.
Yeah.
That dude just doesn't like the spotlight, I guess, because that's exactly what he would have gotten in Philly. So
yeah. Does he even like baseball? Honestly,
I don't know.
Sticking
don't
in know. Anaheim, of all places?
Is that what they play there? Is that what they play? I'm not even sure that's what they play there.
Yep.
Yeah, Liz, Joe Sheehan tweeted this out. Trey Turner is a dead perfect match for Barry Larkin through age 29, once you account for Turner missing 100 games to the pandemic. Larkin was NL MVP at 31 and averaged 6 wins a year from age 30 to 35, strike adjusted. So here's a guy that I think a lot of people think will age well, especially as the rules change a little bit. That will allow for more stolen bases. He's a guy who doesn't rely on power, he's one of the smartest hitters in baseball in terms of understanding. I saw MLB Network did something on this right after the signing. Tom Verducci was walking people through it, how he changes his hitting style, whether he's ahead in the count or behind in the count, to adjust for power, or getting, you know, making contact. And, ooh, you know, all the great ones do that. So this, I know the age and the length of the deal he's going to be playing here until he's in his early 40s, but he is a guy that I think has maybe a longer prime than maybe some other guys would.
It's certainly possible. What I've been telling myself and anyone else who asks is about, you know, the backside of his contract is I don't care. That's a future Liz problem.
Right.
That's a future problem. You know, I think he fits in really well. I don't necessarily think I hate player comps. I hate them. I just don't think they're really personally useful. But I mean, if he is a carbon copy of Barry Larkin, who'd say no?
For sure.
Who would say no to that?
Well, I like Hall of Fame players, and I'm all for adding as many of them in their primes as I can get my hands on right now. And Chris, the deal here is pretty incredible. Jason Stark tweeted this out. We have never seen a free agent deal like Trey Turner's before for a middle infielder. When you look at contracts of 10 or more years and $200 million or more free agent middle infielders, you have Turner's at 11 years, $300 million. Corey Seager last year with the Rangers, 10 years, $325. A-Rod, 10 years, $252. And Cano, 10 years for $240 million. Pretty incredible that Trey Turner has set the new bar there for middle infielders and free agency. And, you know, the Phillies payroll is going to be a big one. I think I saw Zach not Zach Gelb, Matt Gelb, tweet out that he thought it was going to be like a $250 million payroll this coming season, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a super smart move of giving the 11 years. I mean, to me, both time and money aren't real, so it doesn't matter. And like Liz said, it's a future problem.
Yeah. And people forget that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like, it gives them a lot of money to play with. And if they wanted to flirt with like the line, Matt Winkleman had tweeted out that $273 million is the line where it actually moves your first round pick back. So that might be the spot. Hopefully we might be looking at of going into payroll. That would be nice. But I love stretching the deals out farther. And every time we do this whole, think back to Ryan Howard, 5 years, $25 million a year. People freaked out. That's nothing now. Harper's deal, people freaked out. It's nothing now. Whatever Trey Turner's making at the end of his contract will probably be a drop in the bucket at that point. So, and again, it's not my money. I don't care. This is what right. You should do when you're two wins away from the World Series. You go for it. You want the guy. He wants the $300 million mark, obviously. He wants 11 years, or we wanted 11 years to stretch it out. Maybe that was the deal. We'll give you $300 million, but not over 9 years. It'll be over 11 to help us out. I love it. I love everything about it.
Plus, in 11 years, when the Phillies have like potential titles and playoff appearances, like from their history of the time when Harper and Turner were on the team together, is that not exactly what you're paying for? Like, that's why you're paying somebody to be on the team till they're 38, till they're 40 years old, when yeah. you know that their skills will have diminished to an extent, but you're not paying for that. That's just part of the deal you have to give them to get them to come here when they're at their best.
Yeah, it's totally kicking the can down the road, and that's okay, because you have a window here now.
This sport is all about.
This is how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Right.
That's exactly how we do it in baseball.
Yep.
People acting like you don't do that, like that this is something insane to do in baseball, are lying. Like, I don't know what money they're trying to save, whose money they're trying to save. It's always incredible to me.
Right. Well, it's like I said, it's not our money. It's somebody else's money. So if they want to spend it to make the team better during this window, you take advantage of the windows that you have. And, you know, teams are soured because we remember the years after that 2007-11 run, when you could see the team aging and the team didn't want to move on from contracts. And so there was some of that hindering, although I still think a lot of that is overblown, how much the length of the contracts and the money really hindered the Phillies from being able to maintain a competitive roster. It was just that they had these guys they couldn't move on from. But you put Trey Turner in this lineup, and you don't worry about it for another 5 or 6 years. And if he does have a 30s like Barry Larkin had, you don't really have to worry about it for another 5 or 6 years. And, you know, all of these guys, you know, who knows how long they're going to be able to keep this crew together. You hope that they have 2 or 3 at least years to keep this World Series window open. But that's what the World Series did. And we all knew, even if they hadn't made the World Series, they were still going to go hard after one of these guys. But maybe it makes the decision a little bit harder for John Middleton. Getting to the World Series makes it a no-brainer. And I think that was the general consensus from everybody as this offseason began. The Phillies were going to get one of these guys. They were going to get one of these four. And it sure seemed like Trey Turner from the very start was the guy they all wanted the most. Obviously, the connection with Kevin Long as the hitting coach from being with the Nationals, now with the Phillies. And I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on what you think the best lineup will be with Trey Turner in it. I've come up with two lineups that I think would work, and I definitely have one that I prefer. The first lineup is one with Turner in the leadoff spot, and so it goes Trey Turner, Bryce Harper 2, Realmuto 3, and I have Kyle Schwarber down in the cleanup spot with Castellanos at 5, Hoskins 6, Bohm 7, Stott 8, Marsh 9. The other one keeps Schwarber in the leadoff spot, and you have Turner at 2, Harper at 3, Realmuto is your cleanup guy, and then the same Castellanos, Hoskins, Bohm, Stott, Marsh. With the first one, with Turner in the leadoff spot, you go righty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty with your first five, with Schwarber hitting cleanup, which I think is a better spot for him. In the other one, you have Schwarber continuing to lead off with Turner too, and you go righty, lefty, lefty, righty, lefty, righty, 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 righty. You know, you're kind of clogging up your lineup with right-handers just a little bit more with Schwarber batting leadoff. So I don't know, Chris, what do you think? What is your preferred lineup there with Trey Turner?
I kind of grew into Schwarber leading off with having the daycare at the bottom of the lineup. I think we can all agree the bottom of the lineup is going to be a combination of Bohm, Stott, and Marsh.
Yeah.
Maybe Vierling thrown in there. We can all agree that those spots are going to be there. And I feel like them batting and then Schwarber, it's almost like he's batting, you know, a form of cleanup when the second, you know, second time through the order.
No, that's true. Yeah.
I've kind of grown into that. So I'm all about the, I'd like Schwarber, then Turner, Harper, probably go Real Muto. Yeah. And then Castellanos and Hoskins, whichever one's hot at the time, honestly, yeah, flip it day by day.
Yeah.
And then you got the bottom of Bohm, Stott, Marsh. I think that's what I'd go with.
Okay. Justin, what about you?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with Chris. I was looking at Turner's numbers, depending on where he hits in the batting order. He obviously has an exorbitant amount of at bats leading off. But it's just, it's chuckle worthy, as you just heard, because his numbers really, for the most part, just go up the further down in the lineup he hits from the top spot down to the fifth spot, except for cleanup. He appeared in one game. Like, he must have been inserted late or something. Like, he's never hit cleanup, but like first, second, third, and fifth, he hits over 300 in all four spots with obviously limited numbers of time in each. But that's the thing, like that kind of versatility, as long as he's at the top of your lineup somewhere, he's going to find something productive to do. And that's what being a guy who can get on base and has the speed to advance himself can do. I mean, it is nuts. He's got like half the at-bats he has leading off in the two hole and about a quarter in the three hole. And in both cases, yeah, his numbers just kind of go up a little bit every time. So, you know, if Rob Thompson wants to mess around, he can feel free to do that. But as we saw, he's also good at just getting a lineup that works for him and works for his guys and putting it out there every day. So, yeah, I think you guys both put together a couple of lineups I'd agree with. I don't dramatically disagree with anything you guys have said.
Liz, what do you think?
I think it'll be interesting to see how Rob Thompson wants to handle it, because he came in last year with a lineup that had mostly been tested for him by him. He was part of it, but he wasn't leading it. And so he was able to just sort of drop everything in and be like, all right, this is where it's staying. Everyone is going to be, we know that this is where everyone goes. He is going to start the year as the manager himself. So he gets to do what he wants. I know that he likes, you know, the constancy. Having Schwarber at the top, I think, would be fine. But I think trying out Trey Turner at the top of the lineup would also be fine. Like, you read the names, and I waited for you to come to like the one or two duds that are inevitably always in there. And I'm like, wait a minute, I like all these guys. I've seen all these guys perform. They all do well in situations that we know. And so I almost... it's an incredible gift to have this type of flexibility, because there will be a right combination, but the wrong ones don't seem that bad. The wrong ones might not even be that wrong.
I was trying to list all of the key Phillies offensive contributors today in my head, and the fun part was every time I forgot one of them because there's too many of them now.
Yeah,
something I didn't think of though with Schwarber in the leadoff spot. How much does that hinder Trey Turner's base stealing? Because Schwarber, I know his on base was .323 last year, but that's down for him. He's a year removed from a .374 on base percentage. Does that take away from Trey Turner's speed enough to move Schwarber out of the leadoff spot?
It's a good question. If Schwarber did when he would walk, certainly Trey Turner gets on base and you know, is trailing after him. If Schwarber's in front of him, it does clog things up. But I think we saw for the most part, Schwarber is a doubles guy and a homer guy out of the leadoff spot. There's not a lot of singles coming off of his bat when he's hitting leadoff. So unless he's walking and then Trey Turner's following with a walk or a single, I think it could come into play. But that's probably why I would prefer with Turner in leadoff spot, provided it's where everybody feels comfortable. And that's the other thing. Everybody's got to be comfortable hitting in the lineup, and Rob Thompson has a better sense of who's comfortable where. If Schwarber and Turner are more comfortable with Schwarber batting leadoff and Turner hitting second, then great, you know, do it. And, you know, the rest of the lineup will follow suit and it'll flow. In this case, I think looking at it on paper, the lineup with Trey Turner at the top of the lineup and Schwarber hitting fourth gives you more of an opportunity to, I think, put an optimal lineup together. You move Harper up to the two spot, so he gets more at bats. He gets up to the plate more per game as opposed to other players. And regardless of bringing in Trey Turner, you do get to move Rhys Hoskins down in the lineup now to the five or the six spot, depending on again how hot he is, where you want to have him. So there's just the other thing that signing Trey Turner does here, Justin, is that it gives you some cover for Bryce Harper being out for a couple of months. It's not going to be the same kind of offensive production that you would have gotten, say, if you'd gone out and gotten Xander Bogaerts. If you get Xander Bogaerts, he actually can probably match Harper's actual offensive production. But if you're looking at a long-term signing, Bogaerts is probably going to play third base starting in the next year or two. So you could have gotten Bogaerts, and that would have helped you more offensively, maybe, but you would have been more defensively challenged in the next few years. Carlos Correa just never really seemed like a match in Philadelphia for whatever reason. There was no smoke concerning Carlos Correa to Philadelphia. So you do get a little bit of cover now with Bryce Harper out for a couple of months in Trey Turner, a guy who does things differently than Harper does, but hopefully will help set up your offense in a way so that, again, you can kind of sprinkle in some more production in whoever is going to be playing DH or first base or third base or one of the corner outfield spots while you rotate guys through the designated hitter here.
The Phillies have like six DHs. You know, they can, a couple of them can afford to be table setters. And you know, the problem with this offense isn't that it doesn't work. It's not that it doesn't work on paper. Like, you know, a bunch of different sluggers can obviously be a productive lineup. It's that the consistency of these guys is what winds up driving people insane. So to have somebody who can maybe bring a little consistency or at least a different type of game to the lineup, not just like a thumper, that's you know, that can help a lot. I'm more thinking in terms of like, okay, so Harper's not here. Turner obviously is. You know, you get at least a month down the road getting away with that. And this team played some of its best baseball without Bryce Harper in 2021. I'm wondering how this ripple affects, you know, other people in the lineup, hopefully in a positive way. I hesitate to make the whole "this takes pressure off other hitters" argument because I feel like we've waited for that to happen road. In the past. And I mean, like before now, like past eras, I was waiting for Michael Franco to feel the pressure come off him and, you know, guys before that. And, you know, it's just, you can't really rely on that. But I do hope that whatever reseeding this lineup goes through, as we wait for Bryce Harper to come back, that whatever it is and whatever Trey Turner can bring is enough to make guys like Nick Castellanos get a little more activated and be a more active participant in the offense, because the Phillies, there's really not an excuse to not be as offensive a team without Bryce Harper. Like, you should be more of an offensive team with Bryce Harper, but look at these guys like 1 through 9, like all these guys can do something for you.
Yeah.
Even if it is the bottom of the lineup, a couple like they can still hit line drives. They can still get on base. Like Bryson Stott is fast as well. Like there are tools they bring that are beneficial to this offense more so more than just let's hope I get a meatball and I knock the crap out of it, you know, for the weekend. So yeah, I feel like there's a lot to learn about this lineup without Bryce Harper in it and Trey Turner in it, because I feel like hopefully there can be a ripple effect on everybody else, because that, you know, that's what they're going to need. They're going to need to go back to having a comprehensive approach to having everybody finding a way to do something, even if it's just poking a single over somebody's head and getting a few runs in.
Liz, the Phillies have not had an all-star shortstop since 2005, Jimmy Rollins. It's been a long time since they've had a player who can play shortstop at a high level here. There's also a full no trade clause with this deal. So 11 years, just like Harper, Trey Turner is here for conceivably the rest of his career. Any issues at all with a no trade clause?
Nah. I mean, maybe I will down the line, but I mean, I don't know. Major League Baseball headquarters could fall into the earth sometime in the next 10 years.
That's very true. Yeah.
Anything could happen. Like, that's the thing. I have no problem with the no trade clause, you know?
Yeah.
He's here now. Like, I'm so excited that they have a serious shortstop. They've got Alec Bohm at third base. He's not like amazing, but he was certainly fine this year.
He got better.
He did. He made some nice plays. So I'm kind of excited to see, you know, some slick fielding once again.
Yeah.
You know, I miss all that.
Imagine if Trey Turner went to the Padres and it turned out, well, the Phillies just weren't willing to give him a no trade clause, so he just went to San Diego.
Like, yeah, right. That would have been awful. So to kind of wrap up Trey Turner for now, I mean, were you guys surprised that it happened this quickly in the winter meetings? Chris, were you surprised that it happened as quickly here in the winter meetings as it did?
A little bit, but after Salisbury on the Phillies Talk podcast with Corey Seidman last night, he basically said that the Phillies were signing him, but in, you know, the most roundabout writer way, quote unquote, it feels like something is in the red zone here, whether it's Phillies or elsewhere. But I tell you this, he's the guy they want. And then he continued to talk about all the guys the Phillies have wanted in the past couple of years that they've gotten. So I was, you know, obviously cautiously optimistic, but I felt like today or tomorrow he was a Philly. I mean, I've been screaming about him being a Philly all offseason, but I really thought that they were going to get it done at the meetings, just get it out of the way, and now just work on pitching. And I'm so happy. I'm so happy that it's out of the way. Yeah. And John, I was telling you before we started recording, I almost had a muted response to the news because I was so convinced this was going to happen. But at the same time, in the past, these are obviously past bad Phillies teams, but you would always see, like, this player looks like the perfect fit for the Phillies, so they're not getting him. That's how I always used to look at everything. I remember in 2007 when the left-handed reliever they traded for from that Boston dropped, J.C. Romero, name was leaving me. I remember J.C. Romero got released by the Red Sox. I was like, no way the Phillies will do it. It makes too much sense. Guess what? They did it.
Got him.
And so I kind of got over it back then. I love it. It did happen. It did happen faster. Overall, it happened faster than I thought it would. But last night, Salisbury really got me going. I was like, okay, he knows and he can't say it for whatever reason, but he's really just trying to give us that old wink. Like, don't worry, guys.
Justin, what about you?
Well, like I said, I assumed this was going to happen at the winter meetings. I'm not surprised they were able to put it together this quickly. I don't think you're wrong saying that these are the types of deals we've typically waited till the end of the or closer to spring training to really, you know, see come to fruition. But I felt like the winter meetings this year were going to be aggressive. I think you had a lot of teams that knew exactly what they needed or wanted to do. I feel like the Phillies pitching situation is a little more ambiguous. So they were more motivated to check this box. And, you know, everything other than the actual signing of the deal had happened. Like, this was all real except for the signing of the actual signing. Everywhere was saying Phillies, Trey Turner. Phillies are the number one most likely team to sign Trey Turner. All the reporters, national writers were pretty much saying without saying that, like, Phillies and Trey Turner, you know, they are linked here in a big way. And then, as Chris said, Jim Salisbury was more or less leading us down the road there. By red zone, he definitely just meant Phillies. It's not a cross sports metaphor at all. So yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm really not. I feel like I went into these winter meetings confident the Phillies were going to make a splash, and I assumed it was going to be exactly the splash we thought it was. Early on, it felt like there was more talk of Bogarts and the Phillies, but that disappeared quickly, and it's just been like Turner, Turner, Turner for weeks. Like you said, there's been absolutely nothing after like a couple of whispers in regards to Correa and Swanson. So it felt like Turner was their guy. This is the place they're going to do that. Dombrowski is well-versed in the winter meetings. He knows how to go there. He knows how to talk to people. He knows how to get his deals done that he wants to make. There's a reason he's going to be in the Hall of Fame someday. So this is the deal I thought was going to happen at the time I thought it was going to happen. So I was more surprised that I learned about this news from like word of mouth. And I realized it was the first time that it happened. Like, I didn't get it from Twitter or something in years, like over like 10 years. I feel like I happened to be doing something else and someone was, oh, Turner. I was like, wow, this is nice. We should talk in person about baseball more often. Yeah. This is wild.
Yeah. Like, Liz, I was in my car driving home, Liz, when you hit us up all on Slack and let us know that it happened. So it was definitely weird not to get this from Twitter.
Yeah. I was shocked. I was absolutely stunned. On continued success last week, Justin and I talked about this when we thought the deal might be done. And he said, as he mentioned, he thought it was going to be done during the winter meetings. I didn't think so. I thought it was going to happen much later. But my ideal situation was exactly what happened. My ideal situation was Dave Dombrowski pulls a Ruben Amaro and signs the biggest player to a huge contract before anyone really does anything else major, and just sort of walks into the winter meeting with his, you know, to-do list cut in half, you know, just swinging the biggest dog in the place. Like, that's exactly what I wanted. You know, it's like a weirdly showy thing because nothing else was happening. There had been no like intense rumors just out of nowhere. And all of a sudden everyone's talking about the Phillies, like the same day that Verlander signed. No one cares about that. Who cares? Right.
That's the next item we're going to discuss, but that kind of wraps up the Trey Turner conversation. We'll have more on this. Obviously, Trey Turner is going to meet with the media, and we'll hear from him as the days go along. But the Phillies obviously sign another cornerstone player, another potential future Hall of Famer to be their starting shortstop or middle infielder for the next 11 years. Trey Turner and Bryce Harper are going to be here with us for a very, very long time. So a lot of excitement here for the Phillies and Phillies fans. And we'll step away, take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about what the Phillies might be looking to do next and a couple other of the one of the other big signings, especially in the National League East. We'll do that coming up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So one other big signing that happened just before Trey Turner, a couple hours before Trey Turner signed with the Phillies, and of course that is the New York Mets replacing Jacob DeGrom with Justin Verlander. He leaves the Houston Astros after a long time there, of course, beat the Phillies. Not really beat the Phillies. He struggled in Game 5 against the Phillies, but managed to get his first World Series win ever. And I think that's the last impression that a lot of Phillies fans seem to have of Justin Verlander, forgetting that he was awesome for the Astros in 2022, won the American League Cy Young Award and did it pretty convincingly coming off of Tommy John surgery. Of course, he's very old. He's 40 years old this year. And you don't exactly rely on pitchers who are that old to be a top of the rotation starter. And the Mets are going to have two of those guys in Max Scherzer, who's 39 this year, and Justin Verlander, 40. But Verlander signs with the Mets to a 2-year deal. So they lose DeGrom. DeGrom signed with the Rangers for 5 years, which is kind of interesting. And they bring back they bring on Verlander for a 2-year deal with an option for a third year. I think it's a vesting option, if I read that correctly. So, Justin, let me start with you on this Verlander signing. I don't know. I've seen kind of both sides. If Verlander is like he was this year for the Astros, it's a very good signing by the Mets. But the age and certainly the way he wore down a little bit at the end of last season has some people thinking that he is getting to the point where he's a little bit cooked, and then the top of the Mets rotation is pretty aged. So curious what your thoughts are on Verlander signing with New York.
Well, that's the trick, isn't it? I mean, you start asking that question more and more often as a guy, you know, gets more and more advanced in age in Major League Baseball, because the human body breaks down. It's breaking down whether you're playing professional baseball as a pitcher or not. And if you're doing that, you know, there's obviously a lot of stuff you're doing to counter the decline. But at the same time, Justin Verlander is not somebody whose best days are ahead of him. So just like when they signed Scherzer, it's like, yeah, you know, this guy can come out and have a really good season this year. Or he might come into spring training and, hey, I feel a little achy in my elbow or something, and thus begins some kind of back and forth on and off the injured list situation. Again, I'm not rooting for this kind of nightmare to hit a player just because he plays for a team I don't root for, but it's kind of just the truth of the matter at this point. Like, if the Mets want to fill out their rotation with aging stars, that's fine because they're aging out of the game. And, you know, it's just not as concerning as somebody like, let's say, Zach Gallen, whose name recently appeared in a bunch of people's thoughts when he tweeted a pair of eyeballs. Like, that's a pitcher I don't want the Mets to sign, because that's a guy who is who has had a phenomenal year, who is young enough to be in the league for a while, and who knows how to set down a lineup pretty systematically.
Right.
This kind of signing is like, yeah, we're jumping on the, like, this is not even the part of the career people may remember for Justin Verlander. You know, like, these are his twilight years. And again, I'm not, you know, it's talking down like the guy who has won 2 Cy Young awards in the last 3 years, I'm pretty sure. Right. So pitched. Like,
yeah,
clearly age is having a limited effect on him, and he's been an all-star in 2018, 19, and 2022. So obviously he, like, you know, can throw a baseball still. But again, at the end of the day, this is a guy who will be 40 years old when the season starts. And if he achieves the same level of success he had this year, or a level of success just in general, it will be despite the point he is at in his career. So I'm not super concerned about this. Is he going to beat the Phillies a couple times? Yeah, probably. Probably, you know, he's a very good pitcher, but at the same time, this is a move that doesn't intimidate me too terribly much.
Chris, would you rather have Jacob DeGrom at 5 years or Justin Verlander on this deal that he signed? Like, if you're the Mets, that was your choice that you had to make. Would you have made the same choice?
No, I would have kept DeGrom. I would have thrown the money and years at him. I understand he's not durable or hasn't proven he's durable for many years. But here's the thing, like for the past 3 years, I've been saying Max Scherzer's cooked. It's a wrap. And he keeps proving me wrong, except for last year. When he is on the mound, he is good. But he had two long injury stints. I think, wasn't it one to start the year and one in the middle?
Yeah.
Where he missed a month. Okay. Yep. So yes, when these guys can take the ball on the mound, they are going to be good. They've figured out the age thing, whatever. But I question Verlander's ability to stay healthy at 40 years old. They have the vesting option for the third year, which I'm sure they're hoping doesn't vest. Because if he pitches 140 innings, I believe it is, in the second year, that option will vest. He could pitch 140 very bad innings for them. I feel like it's a lateral move at best for them. He's coming off Tommy John. What was it? 170 innings plus the playoffs that he did.
Yeah.
I don't know. I would have given all the money to DeGrom and bet that he's finally healthy, because he looked fine at the end of the year. Once he took the ball, that was it. There was no setbacks. There was none of that stuff going on anymore. I would have bet on DeGrom, and I'm not saying that just because I hate the Mets. Like, when he went to the Rangers, I was ecstatic because I knew they were going to get Verlander or Rodon. It was just, you know, it was one of those things, like kind of like how the Phillies were going to get Turner. But it's like I did not want them to get Rodon at all.
Is the logic like that giving DeGrom 5 years until his like 39-year-old season, but he's like an injury risk, so he's more likely to have the kind of decline you're worried about when a guy is hitting that point in his career, versus signing a guy who literally is 39 now and doesn't have as much of an injury?
See, he does. Verlander has just as much of an injury risk because he had Tommy John.
That's what my question is. Like, what's the logic here? They basically, like, couldn't you make the argument that they jumped to the end of DeGrom's deal and then signed him, kind of? It's like the equivalent of, well, we don't want to pay a guy to pitch here until he's 39. Let's sign this 39-year-old who will be 40 next year.
And DeGrom, with all those injuries, I know this might sound stupid, I don't know, but it's a lot of innings he didn't throw that aren't on his arm right now. So if he does put it together, I don't know, I feel like he's a young 34 years old right now.
What do you think, Liz?
Baseball terms.
I don't know. The Mets just decided to sign two people my age over the past 2 years. Like, I hurt myself getting up this morning. Like, I strained my eyes somehow. And it's my right eye has been bothering me all day. Like, and I just did that, like, waking up too fast, literally. So,
You don't work out your eyes the same way that Justin Verlander works out.
I know.
His body.
How could I? I just think it's, they signed him because he's just won a Cy Young, and you know, he is still good, but he's also I don't understand why you wouldn't keep DeGrom. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Like, did they just not want to be locked in? I don't know why. Because when he's on the mound, he's good. And if you can start making that happen more.
Yeah.
I expected some velo dip from DeGrom when he got back, and there was none. The guy was pumping 101 right away. I was just
like,
oh,
healthy,
man.
He's just like,
he's ridiculous.
The best pitcher on the planet. Yeah.
He's the best in the game.
I would be much more.
How do you let that go? How do you let it go?
If DeGrom was still in the NL East, then now, like, there's Verlander, but I'm like, okay. Because, again, I can't get past this. It's like, well, we don't want to pay him because he's going to get old and hurt. So let's get an older guy who was recently hurt. Now this doesn't make sense to me.
It's just,
it feels like they just skipped through the middle parts of the deal where they could have benefited the most from having DeGrom.
Where it makes sense is how much dead money you're spending. So if you basically sign five years of DeGrom and you don't have use of him for 3 years, you're flushing money. If you're Steve Cohen, you're actively flushing money down the toilet.
Why don't they have use for him, and waste
if he's injured is what I'm saying. Like if he's hurt, if he's only giving you a third of a year or a half of a year, that's not a great investment over the course of 5 years, because now you're on the hook for a longer amount of time as opposed to signing a guy who for 2 years. I don't think with DeGrom you're worried that at age 39 he's going to fall apart. What you're worried about with DeGrom is at age 35, age 36, age 37, age 38, and age 39 he's going to be hurt and only give you limited production.
It's risk. Okay.
That's the risk. That's the difference in the risk, I think.
That's Steve Cohen being a coward. Got it. All
essentially,
right.
Yes.
Exactly.
Essentially, that's what it is. So the Phillies, go ahead.
If you want to be a little bit fair to the Mets, which I never do, did you guys read the Buster Olney piece on DeGrom leaving? He basically hated New York.
No.
Yeah, I think that was part of it, too.
He absolutely hated it. And the fact that he didn't give them a chance to match, but here's the thing. You shouldn't have gone with the 3 years and the high AAV. You should have known what DeGrom was looking for and what it would have took to keep him in New York. Because ultimately, the money's going to win out. He grew up a Braves fan. He wanted to go play for the Braves. The Braves were uncomfortable going to 5 years, so he immediately eliminated them and went to the Rangers. But I love the fact that DeGrom hated New York. They've already been putting out their posts. Thank you, Jake. DeGrom hasn't said a word to the Mets or their fans. He hated it there, and I love that. Sorry, I just had to get that in there.
No, that seems clear. He will wait as long as possible. He might not send something out until, like, before spring training, which would be amazing.
I will keep track. Don't worry.
Thank you.
I just wonder how Mets fans feel about this. I think Mets fans partially were tired of... I think it's damaging also, as far as, like, a team-building perspective, to not know if you're going to have your best starter for most of a season. You know, with Verlander, I think he showed last year that he at least could be durable and make it through an entire season, even after coming off of Tommy John surgery. So I think maybe there's just more confidence that over a 2 year span, you're going to get more out of Verlander than you would out of a 5 year span with Jacob DeGrom. Because when your starter goes down, it's a morale hit to your team. Now all of a sudden you got to find somebody to sub for him. You got to access the depth in your organization. And so, I would have signed DeGrom to a 5 year deal over Verlander for a 2 year deal, but I'm saying as far as the Mets are concerned, I can kind of see where they were coming from in terms of making the decision they did. And Verlander made it easy for them because he didn't want to play there anyway.
Well, they also could have made New York a better place for him to want to play.
Exactly, they could have laid the group. They didn't have to make it so that Verlander felt like he was escaping from New York, you know, like he's Snake Bliskin trying to figure out a way to get out of there.
That's
a great analogy.
They wouldn't have acquired Verlander if they had kept DeGrom, which I feel like means that he is something of a consolation prize.
Kind of, yeah. Yeah, well, that's Carlos Rodon is still out there. I mean, if I'm the Mets, I would have gone harder after Carlos Rodon than Justin Verlander. And I think that's the question we should be asking ourselves is, Liz, you know, if you're the Mets, why are you would you rather have Carlos Rodon on a 5 year deal and Justin Verlander on a 2 year deal? Or would you rather have done Justin Verlander for two and Rodon and not Rodon for five?
Hold on. I think I would have. This is going to go against a lot of what I think I probably would have just gone with Verlander for two. Is that a wrong answer?
I would have too. I would have gone Verlander for two because I still think he's got enough left in the tank.
Yeah.
I
understand he's old and everything. Old, Jesus. Not
I'm talking baseball old. Old in real life is 80, 90 years old. Major League Baseball old is 40. This is just a fact.
Imagine being like a running back in the NFL is old at 31.
This age, I'm just giving us all this the
cover,
the leeway here. Yeah. Hey, we're not saying it's old.
I'm still getting used to this. It's hard.
That's right.
Give me time. Eventually, I'll get used to how old I am.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. That's something we all struggle with here. So,
ahead, I think he's got enough in the tank. Like I understand that he's older, but I would need him to show me that he's not good. Like, I don't want to, there's not necessarily a reason to make the assumption that he's going to be terrible. So I would be, I'd be totally fine with him for 2 years because I mean, it's not a huge loss then if he's not bad.
Right.
But if you had the ability to side Jacob DeGrom, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But also, the Mets farm system, as far as I know, is very top heavy with position players. They don't have any pitching coming through the pipeline. So that's why I thought Rodon was perfect for them. I mean, I know he's got his own injury history, but he's younger and they could have plugged him in for 5 or 6 years. So like, it's almost crazy. Verlander makes more sense for the Phillies than it would for the Mets.
Yeah.
Because the Phillies have that pitching coming through the pipeline. So I don't know.
Yeah. I always thought the Phillies were a great match. And I talked to Craig Goldstein from Baseball Prospectus on the last podcast. He said the same thing. He's like, Phillies make all the sense in the world for a guy like Verlander, but just never seemed like the Dave Dombrowski was willing to, was interested in spending his resources there. But it does look like in the last few minutes we have here, it does look like the Phillies are now going to move on to starting pitcher. They need another starting pitcher, having lost Zach Eflin, having lost Kyle Gibson. Noah Syndergaard's a free agent. They could potentially bring him back, but that's not the ideal scenario, I don't think. I think you want to get a guy who could start a game four if you needed him to. He might not be, you know, he might not outduel Christian Javier in a game four, but you want somebody who can at least get you through 162, pitching for you every fifth day. And then maybe by the end of the year, Andrew Painter is in a position where he's a dominant number four, number five type starter who you throw into game four of a playoff series and you're like, yeah, trying to hit this kid. But there are a bunch of different names out there. Guys like Nathan Eovaldi, Andrew Heaney, Jose Quintana, Ross Stripling, Jameson Taillon, Michael Wacha, Taiwan Walker. There are some others out there too. Chris, do any of those guys interest you in particular? There's a couple of guys that I think are particularly interesting that I think would be good fits for this team.
I think Taillon does. I think he makes sense for this team. He is already he's already been leaning more into like the cutter heavy type of repertoire, which you know that Caleb Cotham loves. He seems like that pitcher where he's just going, Caleb Cotham will take him and figure him out, a la Kevin Long fixing everybody's swing. He just seems like the right move. There's no qualifying offer attached to him. I think that is apparently a big thing for the Phillies, considering we once again will not have a second round pick since 2017, I think now, which is a good thing. I'm not complaining. Yeah. I don't care. I want these.
You give it up for Trey Turner for sure. No doubt.
Exactly. So I think he'd be good. I'd also wouldn't mind Jose Quintana. I don't know if he has a qualifying offer. I don't think he does.
He does not. No.
Because he was traded.
He was traded midseason. Yeah. I love Jose Quintana.
Either of those two, I am perfectly cool with as a number four. And like you said, Painter, I mean, Tom Verducci screaming at the top of the lungs of his lungs on MLB Network about who he's going to be in the opening day roster. I wouldn't go that nuts, but it's realistic to see him in the rotation by May or June and riding the season out, you know, even into the playoffs. Maybe I asked Justin on Absolutely Hammered if you know that Andrew Painter is going to have like a 2.5 ERA, are you starting him out in April and then shutting him down like the Nationals had to with Strasburg in the playoffs? Or are you waiting until May or June to bring him up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Andrew Painter. I'm delaying the start of his season. Mm-hmm. I'm pushing him back by a month. I'm not starting anything with him until May so that he's ready to go September, October, so that I can use him in the playoffs if I want to. Right. Yes. That's why a guy like Jameson Taillon, who MLB.com's Mark Feinsand has linked to the Phillies, or Quintana or Jameson Taillon or Taiwan Walker or somebody like that. They're really important because you need somebody to get you through the 162. And then on the off chance, you know, things don't go as planned with Painter or with something else, or maybe a guy like Taillon or Walker really hits his stride in Philadelphia, even more so than say like Jameson Taillon did with the Yankees these last couple of years. And suddenly you have a really good number four starter.
Yeah. You know what I'm trying to quell my instinct here of, I hope the Phillies just do some overkill, because facing the Astros in the World Series did a lot for like, boy, I wish we could just trot out another world beating, number three at worst pitcher to pitch in this very important game. But, Noah Syndergaard it is. All right. See you out there, boys. So it is, yeah, not that I have too much to complain about in regards to him. It's just more like, I want to be as deep as the team that beat us, essentially. I want to be also good at the thing they were so good at. And I feel like they really don't have to overspend to do it. I feel like they want to be very careful about what happens to these top two, three guys in their farm system. I'm not saying they necessarily hold on to all three of them forever. But I feel like Painter has a role to play in a Phillies uniform. I feel like you don't have to worry too much about his future with the team. And like you said, I think that role comes later in this season. That's kind of how it's supposed to work, really. That like, by the time some of these guys have been pitching regularly and might be a little gassed, you can reach down to your minors, bring up a top prospect, or even somebody who's not a top prospect, somebody who can just contribute in a key way. So if that's what the Phillies are missing. I was pretty intrigued to see them link to Jameson Taillon. He kind of fits the role that we're talking about. Obviously, Quintana's name is, that's also, it's fine. That's fine. That would be fine as well. Yep. I like Taijuan Walker. But Taillon is, he was the bottom 8% as far as people hitting him hard. Like, the exit velocity on his batted balls was pretty low, which, you know, for a team that gets dinged a lot for its defense and, you know, in general doesn't want the ball moving too fast off the bat. That could be of use to the Phillies. And he also doesn't walk a lot of guys. He was among the league leaders in walk percentage in 2022. So keeping base runners off base and keeping the ball from getting hit too hard would be a huge boon for a guy who you're considering a number four starter.
What do you think, Liz? Taillon, Quintana, any of those guys ring a bell for you?
I agree with what everyone has had to say. I have truly no real preference at this moment, and I don't think I could contribute more meaningfully than anyone else has. So,
but you know why that is? Because we're talking about replacing Kyle Gibson's.
That's right. There's not a whole...
Because instead of the sexy shortstop conversation, which abruptly ended today, we now have to talk about who will replace Kyle Gibson, who will probably be the Baltimore Orioles marquee signing of the offseason.
Oh, man.
Wow.
What are you...
Phillies. Now we're mad. We were happy and now we're mad. That's how the cycle works.
Sign Matt Moore. Sign Matt Moore.
Hey, I signed Matt Moore.
Not that I'm not interested.
It's
that
you have like a sub barely ERA.
Yeah.
I can't get excited about, like, what am I going to get excited about now?
No, I know.
Signing Matt Moore.
Yeah, Matt Moore. She's gonna be your eighth inning lefty, no doubt. Matt Moore had a great year as a bullpen. No, but it's you're. And I said this today on Twitter. It's like all these guys, these mid rotation starters, they're all pretty much the same guy. So just grab one. I don't really care. It's like a bargain. It's like a bargain bin, and they're all going to cost more than you want because pitching prices are insanely high right now. Chris Bassett's another one I didn't mention. Chris Bassett would be another potential guy that you would put in there. Hey,
like there are pluses and minuses to some of these guys, but like you're. Right. The most important thing is for the Phillies to have backup plans and to remain flexible.
That's telling you right now,
kind of
Chris Bassett's career is over because of the pitch clock. His career is over.
That's going to be a problem. He is a slow worker. That's going to be one of those things that I think people aren't talking enough about are some of the rules changes and how that might affect certain players in the free agent market and the trade market. And, you know, we talk about all the free agents out there, pitchers and everybody else. Trades are a way that these teams can improve themselves. And we'll see if Dombrowski is able to swing some trades this week that might help them to get somebody who might be a little bit better than what we're talking about, but we'll see. I'm not thinking that he's necessarily going to go down that road, but Dombrowski, I think all of us have enormous trust in Dave Dombrowski and his plans for making this team better. And so far so good, bringing Trey Turner aboard on that 11-year, $300 million deal, $27.7 million average annual value, gives the Phillies some flexibility and freedom to continue adding to this roster in 2023 and the next few years. We can do some final thoughts if anybody has any. Liz, any final thoughts from you before we wrap up?
Sure. Our good friend Jarrett Seidler over at Baseball Prospectus tweeted today about how this is what Dombrowski has done is essentially what's supposed to happen. You know?
Yeah.
This is how a team rewards its fan base for being there in the playoffs and with the support because they want to win and we want them to win. So I thought that was really prescient. Cool. I'm looking for it now and I can't see it. Maybe here it is. I've been looking for it for the past 2 minutes. It's a good, you know what? Good for the Phillies. Their fans supported them through a pennant run and they're supporting the fans by making active plays to bring it all home. This is how it's supposed to work. It is. And I feel grateful that the Phillies finally did turn the corner and are, you know, this is now what we expect from them. It's a cool and awesome change.
Very cool indeed. Justin, how about you? Any final thoughts?
It's certainly what you should expect from Dave Dombrowski. It's why it was easy to get excited about him being here, even if everyone was wondering, well, who's he going to trade? The farm system's so shallow. And then for a year, he took a very unaggressive role. But this is like, this is what we looked forward to. I think we talked about it before it happened, even as far back as last winter, when it was like, this is the Dave Dombrowski. Like, this is the role he's here to play. He's here to make the team better. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame because of how many teams he's made better. And the key to it seems to be, and bear with me on this, but the key to it seems to be making trades and spending money to bring players who are better than the players you have into your organization. And it just makes you wonder what these teams were doing before Dave Dombrowski got there. Like, what if we did nothing? What if we just did nothing and stayed crappy?
Like the Mets at the trade deadline?
Would that make us rich? And Dave Dombrowski's like, I have some ideas on that. And suddenly they're in the playoffs and it's like, wow, well, this is way better. So yeah, I think you saw a little bit of that. It's been a very small part of it. You saw a little bit of the whole, well, what are the Phillies going to look like when, like, all their stars are 38 years old and they're all locked up? Is anybody saying that about the Braves, who have like five players on 12-year deals at this point, like 14-year deals down in Atlanta? Yeah. Nobody's saying that. Yeah, because
super cheap.
Because that's overall the point. You know how this is going to work. Like, this is good players getting paid huge amounts of money for an amount of production that's only going to be available for a window of the time they're there. At the end of the day, I think people are more interested in what's going to happen in 2023 than in 2030. Like, this is what baseball fandom is anymore. And it's awesome. It's awesome to be back in this position. It's going to be great fantasizing about lineups. And if the Phillies sign Matt Moore, the Daily News headline will be Matt Moore with just 1-0.
I'd like it. And it will be. You're right. Do people still buy the paper, though? Do they do headlines on actual papers at this point? I don't know. I haven't seen an actual newspaper in quite some time. It's possible. Chris, final thoughts.
Man, I'm just happy to be back here. Like, what we're doing right now, just expecting, you know, in my opinion, the best shortstop on the free agent market to sign with the Phillies, expecting it to the point where the news drops and I'm like, yeah. Like, not even jumping around or anything, and just,
you're not, you know, shocked. It's just like,
no,
yeah, that's
no,
right.
Like that. Yeah, that is what should have happened, and it happened. And, you know, with our Andrew Painter discussion of would you rather a whole year and shut him down for the playoffs? The reason you don't do that is because it's we're not at the point anymore of will this team make the playoffs? They're a playoff team. Bottom line, that is what it is. It's now about how far we go into October for the foreseeable future, for at least 3 to 5 years easily. I'm just happy to be back here. And like Justin said, it's crazy how easy it is to swing right back into the momentum that we used to have. And the way we went about ourselves from 07 to 2011, even past that, it just fits like a glove. I'm so happy to be back doing this, having happy podcasts.
Happy podcasts.
Is this allowed?
Yeah. Happy podcasts are allowed. And here's the deal, man. We were not podcasting during that 07 to 11 run. And it feels like we're now podcasting at least at the start of another good run, and bringing Trey Turner aboard, a no-brainer. And this is a universally praised baseball move. It makes just way too much sense for the Phillies, and the Phillies did the thing that makes sense. And, you know, sometimes, you know, baseball people, sports people, they can get too cute. They can overthink things. At the end of the day, sometimes you just go out and get the best player available for what it is you need. And it just so happens in this case, it's Trey Turner coming to Philadelphia for 11 years, $300 million. Great signing by Dave Dombrowski. And the winter meeting's still another couple of days to go, and we'll see what else the Phillies might be able to pull off here as far as getting some pitching into the fold. But a tremendous move by the Phillies and Dave Dombrowski that will make this team better in 2023 and beyond.
Folks, I have something to add real quick.
Go ahead.
Brian Reynolds, I spent all last winter being obsessed with you.
Oh, man.
Now you request a trade?
Right.
Jerk. Enemies for life.
No doubt. Enemies. Boo. I couldn't believe that.
Boo that man. Every time he comes to Philadelphia with Pittsburgh, once a year for 3 games. Boo that man relentlessly. Folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Thanks to Justin, thanks to Chris, and thanks to Liz for coming on and breaking down the Trey Turner signing and previewing the next couple of days here at the winter meetings. And folks, make sure you check out all the great stuff we got going on at the Good Fight podcast feed. And to go to our Good Fight Patreon, or the Hittin' Season Patreon, I guess we should call it. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season, where you can hear Chris and Justin on Absolutely Hammered and all the other great podcasts that we do. For all of those who are willing to just chip in and help us out a little bit over there, a nice bonus for everybody who is able to take care of us in that way. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.